Second hour, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you, reacting to the Titans 20-12 loss in Denver in week one yesterday afternoon. I am out here at Greystone Golf Club in Dixon, Tennessee for the Brent Peterson Golf Classic, benefiting the Preds Foundation and the Peterson Foundation for Parkinson's. Great event out here in Dixon. And again, it is a gorgeous day for golf. Ran into Willie Donick earlier. Make sure to tune in 3-6 for DVD as well. Willie had some strong thoughts on yesterday's game, too. Parker Kelly is back at our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Let's get into Cam Ward. We spent the first hour on Brian Callahan for the most part, and Callahan, I think it's the beginning of the end for him after yesterday. It was such a disaster that I don't know if he can dig himself out of it. He's going to have his chances, but I don't know if he's able to do it. Cam Ward, in his debut, it was a tough matchup to go on the road to a hostile environment and face maybe the best defense in the league. And they lived up to that moniker yesterday. I mean, Nick Benito looked like a man with his hair on fire every time he was coming off the line. And Patrick Surtain, I mentioned to Parker, I was like, I didn't see Patrick Surtain the entire game because they just didn't throw at him. I would love to see the PFF or the next-gen stats on how many times the Titans targeted Patrick Surtain, because I don't know if they did the entire game. For Cam Ward, I think his debut was fine. And if I had to give it a grade, I think I would probably say C+, B-, somewhere in there. And it wasn't all his fault, as we've gone through. The drops were bad. The play calling wasn't great. But Cam Ward also didn't help himself a whole lot. The two sacks after the muff punt were horrible. And I'd like to see the play call there, especially on the third down one, of like, why are you running vertical? And, you know, on third down and what? It was like third down and 17 at that point. It's like you're in field goal range. You can take the lead with the field goal. Just run something safe, little drag over the middle, a screen pass, a draw, something to not put you out of field goal range. And he took another sack. You had to punt it. So Cam Ward, I give him some deductions there on those two sacks, even though protection wasn't great, and I don't know what the route concepts were down the field. The intentional grounding late in the game, too, like, I like the idea from Cam Ward there, but you got to make sure you're out of the tackle box. He kind of drifted left and then rolled right and maybe thought he had gotten outside, but he really was in the same spot he started from. So Cam Ward was not perfect yesterday, but man, was he not helped out by his receivers, by the coaching staff, by the offensive line. 112 yards, 43% completion percentage. But as I mentioned earlier, there were at least seven plays I think you can look at that should have been completions from Cam Ward based on the throw that he made, and they weren't. So you turn those over, all of a sudden he's 19 for 28, and, you know, if it's 7 yards per attempt or so, and most of them were downfield, you could probably add another 100, 115 yards, and all of a sudden it looks pretty good. 19 of 28 for 230 yards is not a bad start to his career, but I think it's a C+ or a B- from Cam Ward. I don't think he hurt the team all that much, but he didn't make enough plays to help the team win the game either. Parker, you think that's fair?
I do. I'm probably with you. I'd give it a C+. I thought he stood in the pocket really well with all the pressure that was coming at him. I mean, Sean Payton, Vance Joseph, that entire defense, they were not going to take it on easy on Cam Ward whatsoever. So I thought he stood in the pocket well. I thought he saw the field well. Obviously, we know the poise, the calmness. He never gets too high, never gets too low. So that was obviously impressive. But the biggest thing was he did not have help, because I counted 7 drops in total from the receivers yesterday. The offensive line gave up 6 sacks, didn't have much help in the run game outside of a couple plays from Tony Pollard. So there was so much that just went wrong around him, including the play calling, the situational awareness. But overall, Cam Ward, he didn't turn the ball over, which is a plus, and he was very poised.
Right. That's the one thing that I wanted to bring up, was he didn't put the ball in danger, which is important. There was the one play. It was the play where they tried another screen, and no one was there to catch it. So he just kind of had to run right, and he was holding the ball a little loosely in his right hand before he just flicked it out of bounds. It ended up being an illegal formation or something on the Titans. Another penalty, another ME, another sin. But for Cam Ward, again, Lenny says that's insane. How could you give him a C-plus or a B-minus? He didn't even get a touchdown. He took big sacks. Like, you can't stat watch. If you watch the game, I thought Cam Ward did about everything he could to try and salvage that. And you look at that last drive, were they easy catches for Calvin Ridley or Chigakonkwo? I wouldn't say they were the easiest catches ever. But those are NFL receivers have to catch those passes. And I'm wondering, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but like, is the ball not catchable from Cam Ward? It wasn't an issue in college, but it is strange how many just absolute seeds from Cam Ward were just dropped. And I don't really know how to react to that. I guess we'll see with a larger sample size starting next week against the Rams, but it was just so strange. It's like every time he made a great throw, his receivers dropped it. And I think C-plus is probably about fair. B-minus maybe is a little bit high, considering, yeah, they didn't move the ball very well after that first drive of the game. But I really don't think Cam Ward did anything completely disastrous outside of taking that third down sack. I think that was the worst play that he made. And actually, the second down sack was a big loss, too. That was a Shedeur Sanders-like sack. So I would probably go C-plus. Those two plays on the sacks after the muff punt were both big negatives. But outside of that, he didn't hurt the team. And that's a lot more than you can say for most of the players and coaches on the offensive side yesterday. Cam Ward, I don't think, hurt the team all that much. Everybody else pretty much did. I mean, even Tony Pollard had a fumble in field goal range that took 3 points off the board. So I'll go C-plus for Cam Ward in his debut yesterday. Was it anything special? No. But I think it was a good building block moving forward for Cam Ward to start his growth. And, you know, I've seen some comments on the text line and the YouTube chat of they need to get Callahan out of there as fast as possible if they don't want to stunt his growth. And I get that. But I think it was a good start for Cam Ward in terms of what he showed in his processing and the playmaking ability. I mean, that third down play to start the game, where it would have been a three and out on his first drive, and he just kind of conjured it out of nowhere. You saw the spatial awareness that everybody has been fawning over from Cam Ward, of just like, how did he even know that Tony Pollard was there? And he made a play. So there was some good, there was some bad. C-plus for Cam Ward is what I'm going to give him. Let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Edward is on the line wanting to go back to the coaching. Edward, thanks for calling. What you got?
Hey, guys, can you hear me okay?
Yep, we got you.
All right. this is the first game of the season. First game. I think Brian Callahan deserves 3 years. I do. I know we're going to differ about that. I think that overall the players seemed to play pretty good yesterday. What little I was able to see, I had to listen on the radio on some of the games. Snead seemed to be around the ball quite a bit. Just maybe a second or two short. making the tackle, but he was there. That showed hustle. I thought Hooker played well. I thought Simmons played well. I thought Cam Ward, that first drive where he shuffled that ball out, quick thinking. I mean, that was the commentators were very impressed with it. And just hear me out on this. This isn't a coaching problem. This is an ownership problem. I know you probably don't want to hear that, but that's the bottom line here. From 99 to 2013, they had a pretty good winning record. And from 2013 to now, it's sorry. You know what happened in 2013, guys?
What?
Bud Adams died.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think this is just an annoyance for Amy Adams. Have you heard anything from her in the last 24 hours? I, I haven't really tried to go online and look or anything. But what really chaps me, okay, and it wasn't yesterday's game. It was last night's game. Derrick Henry almost having 1,000 yards. I'm being facetious, guys. Denard Hopkins making one-arm touchdown catches. That's what annoys me, okay? I'm going to keep supporting him. I'm going to keep watching him. But overall, I mean, 20-12, you know, it's disappointing. But as I called in last week, I said, I didn't expect him to win. I wanted to see how the players played. But anyway, I'd like to get your comments on that. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Edward. I mean, I think it starts from the top down, and Brian Callahan is going to get a lot of flack there for yesterday's game, but clearly there have been a lot of big-picture mistakes over the last few years, and yeah, that Ravens game yesterday with Derrick Henry probably didn't make Titans fans feel all that much better about the way their team played yesterday. Couple of texts on the text line. John says, Cam would have been a fifth-round pick last year, so Collar shouldn't act like he doesn't need time to develop. That is just not true. Cam likely would have been picked somewhere between the J.J. Cam as a prospect this year, not Cam as a prospect last year, but Cam, he would have been picked somewhere in the J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix range, maybe even Michael Panks. He would have been one of the fourth, fifth, or sixth quarterbacks drafted. So that's not true. But Lenny, talking about Cam Ward, says he helped the Broncos score right before the end of the first half. Are you really blaming Cam Ward for that sequence there? Like, when none of his receivers know they're supposed to catch the ball on the screen, and he has to just dirt it, and then the protection breaks down, Dan Moore gets beat off the edge, and Cam Ward just narrowly avoids a safety. That's not on Cam Ward. That was on Brian Callahan and really the rest of the offensive players. There were things to blame Cam Ward for yesterday. That was definitely not one of them. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We see you waiting. We will get to your calls coming up next. Again, the Titans fall 20-12 to the Broncos in week one yesterday. 0-1, they come back home to face the Rams this Sunday. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday morning. Next man up, 1025 The Game. That was Brian Callahan yesterday talking about Cam Ward in his NFL debut. Said he looked like the moment wasn't too big for him. Obviously, the stats aren't going to show the perfect picture of how Cam Ward played yesterday. Lots of drops. The offensive line wasn't great, but overall, 12 of 28, just over 100 yards. It wasn't a great game for Cam Ward by any means. I don't think it was horrible. I said C-plus overall. But Brian Callahan mentioned he felt like Cam Ward was in control, and I really did see that. Like, Cam Ward commanded that offense yesterday. Adam in Portland on our on the YouTube chat says there were so many times they showed Cam where he looked ticked off. The man is a winner, and he knows he's getting no help. Yeah, the amount of times where Cam Ward was holding someone accountable after the play, I'd like to see it less, because that would mean players are making less mistakes. But, you know, Cam Ward, he was getting after Tyler Lockett. He was getting after Calvin Ridley. He was getting after Alec Iemanner, Chim Dike. Like, he was in control of that offense. Just one little thing yesterday, Parker, I don't know if you noticed this. Cam Ward was scaring me every time he took the snap. Every time he took the snap, it looked like he wasn't ready for it. Did you notice that?
That's just the way he stands. He's been standing like that in practice. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. Like, his hands weren't up to catch the snap.
And yeah.
So it was a jump scare for me every time when I saw the snap come back, and I thought that it was mistimed. Like, and I started to get used to it at the end of the game, but it was funny. It was the first couple of quarters, every time Cam Ward took the snap, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be a fumble. And he was ready for it. Hopefully that doesn't rear its ugly head if he's, you know, can't get the hands up in time. But that was just a little thing yesterday that I noticed with Cam Ward.
It's like Ashton Jeanty's running back stance. It's the
right.
Same thing for a quarterback.
Right. Yeah. It was just a little bit non-traditional from Cam Ward. And, I mean, not saying it's a bad thing, but I thought it was funny. Let's go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. T-Mac from Murfreesboro is on the line waiting. T-Mac, good morning. What you got?
Yeah, I want to make a few comments, and then I'm going to ask the question at the end. So, well, for one, yesterday they faced the number one defense from what the announcer said. So my hope is that it's just going to get better from here. Like, he's already seen the best defense that he can see. Well, I know there's other defenses coming up, but it should get easier from here. And then second, you know, you could definitely see the difference between a Mike Vrabel coach team and a Brian Callahan coach team because, man, those penalties, man, that's a reflection of the team not being coached well and not being prepared and, you know, those self-inflicted negatives. And then the question that I want to ask is I kind of feel like they was babying him. Like, you know, they was calling a lot of run plays and scared to put the ball in his hands and let him step back and pass. Did you guys feel like that they was kind of babying him up until the point that they had to throw? And then I hang up and listen.
Yeah, thanks for the call, T-Mac. It felt inconsistent on the mindset of how aggressive they were going to be with Cam Ward. Like, the end of the first half sequence, they went hyper-aggressive and let Cam Ward throw out of his own end zone three times with less than a minute left in the first half. But then, yeah, it's like after the Xavier Woods interception, you have a chance to go for the jugular a little bit. Like, that's always been my mindset, is when you get a quick change like that. It was like right out of the beginning of the second half, Bo Nix throws another interception. You've got the ball with a chance to go take the lead, and you just ran it in the line three times. Julius Chestnut gets the run on third down, and you kick the field goal. Like, I would have liked to see give Cam Ward a chance there to go make a play. And it was very inconsistent on the way that they called those plays for Cam Ward. And it felt like the situation should have been flipped. It's like, hey, you just had a big, you know, sudden change, get the offense out there. A play action shot might have been the move there. And they didn't try and take the top off the defense. A lot of that does have to do with, again, the Broncos defense is really good. Like, that, it's a really good defense. But I thought the inconsistency in how aggressive they were with Cam Ward was a little bit frustrating yesterday.
So this is a double-edged sword because, yes, I did think they were playing it a little bit conservative with Cam. They did that in the preseason, and now that the regular season here, it's like, okay, let's ramp it up a little bit. But also, he's got to get help. The receivers have to catch the ball. He tried taking some shots, especially up the seam, which he loved to throw in college, but they didn't catch it. And I think it was so interesting because Cam was asked about this in the postgame of, is the ball just getting on the receivers a little bit faster than they anticipate? And he said, no, that wasn't the issue. They're used to it. So what is the problem? Are you not expecting it? Is it coming at you too fast? Or are you just flat out dropping it? I feel like Cam Ward took some chances, but also the play calling was a little bit conservative. So there's two sides to it.
Yeah, you're right. It felt like most of the drops were those seam routes, which was what Cam Ward did really well at Miami with Elijah Arroyo, just, you know, ripping it up the seam over the linebackers' heads. And that was what I believe both the Ridley and Chig drop on the last drive were. And there was the one with Chim in the fourth quarter where I guess Cam Ward thought he was going to get a little bit more horizontal with his route, and instead he took it vertical, and Cam Ward was yelling at him as he came back to the huddle. Like, it is a little bit strange that part of the game just looks sloppy when that's what Cam Ward, that was kind of his bread and butter in college. So I really don't know. Week one is a liar, and I know that's it's a cliche, but it's like, We do have to give a little more of a sample size. I think Brian Callahan is the biggest red flag from yesterday. Let's see how the receivers do in week two. Like, if it's another drop fest in week two, then maybe you have to start asking questions about, you know, is Cam Ward's ball catchable? Are these receivers not very good? Like, I think that's when you can start to maybe raise some alarm bells on the drops. It was one game. I hope that it's not an issue next week, but yeah, Calvin Ridley, we'll get into this coming up next with Calvin Ridley. It's really disappointing, the game we saw from him yesterday. And again, I keep prefacing with the Broncos defense is really good. Like, that may be the best defense that the Titans see all year long. And the Rams are going to be pretty good this week too. But Calvin Ridley, with all the hype that was around him this year, and this is kind of 2 years in a row where it's Calvin Ridley comes into the year and there's a lot of excitement about him, and then he lays an egg in the first game of the season. So let's get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I'm out here at Greystone Golf Club in Dixon, Tennessee for the 15th annual Brent Peterson Golf Classic, benefiting the Preds Foundation and Peterson Foundation for Parkinson's. Again, a phenomenal event out here. It is a beautiful day. The course is absolutely gorgeous. Couldn't pick a better office view. Parker, I love being able to look over and, you know, see your smiling face during this show. But this is a pretty good view that we've got out here in Dixon, and a great event, again, benefiting the Preds Foundation and the Peterson Foundation for Parkinson's. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get a little more in-depth on Calvin Ridley and the drop issues coming up after this here on Next Man Up, 1025 The Game. After yesterday's game, wasn't a bad day for Cam Ward. His receivers didn't help him out, especially Calvin Ridley late in that one. He talks about the drop from Calvin Ridley, says he's a vet, he'll figure it out. But that was a bad day for the Titans. Highly paid number one wide receiver, $92 million for Calvin Ridley. And drops have not just been an issue yesterday, they were an issue last year too. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Titans fall to the Broncos 20-12 in week one. Calvin Ridley, when you pay a guy that much and there's so much hype going on with him into the season, he's got to play better than that. And I've already told the story of how he has injured me with that second drop. My calf cramped up from reacting to his last drop on 2nd and 10 late in the game. It was bad. I just watched it again just to make sure I had the full scope of how bad that drop was. I mean, it was a skinny post about 15, 20 yards downfield, and Cam Ward hit him right in the hands. It was that is not just a ball that an NFL wide receiver has to catch, but a college receiver catches that ball. Like, Cam hit him right where he needed to. Would have been a big play, gotten them, I believe, across midfield, and they would have had a chance to try and go tie the game. Who knows what happens the rest of that drive, but that's a play that Calvin Ridley has to make. And very disappointing to see Calvin Ridley start the season like that. Because, Parker, we mentioned it throughout the offseason and the preseason that this year there weren't issues with Cam Ward and Calvin Ridley connecting in preseason and in training camp. It felt like they were always on the same page. They were clicking. And then yesterday, outside of the one off-schedule play where Cam Ward kind of rolled right and then threw it back left across the field and Ridley made the play, outside of that, it felt like not only were they not on the same page, but when they did connect, Calvin Ridley just couldn't haul it in.
Yeah, and it was literally flipped. Will Levis and Calvin Ridley could not get on the same page last year in training camp. Calvin Ridley and Cam Ward, I was there, I saw it. They were on the same page. And yesterday, I think they still were for the most part. I probably say 75 to 80% of the time, they were on the same page. But Calvin Ridley just flat out dropped the ball, and it's just physical mistakes like that that can kill you. Yeah, sure, there were a couple passes from Cam Ward that were tough catches to make. But as an NFL receiver, you're getting paid $90 million. You still got to bring those in.
Right, and I said it in the last segment, I don't think it's time to raise red flags on Calvin Ridley and the pass catchers yet. It was one game. It was a really bad game for the wide receivers. And again, not just the drops, but knowing where they're supposed to be. It felt like there were more miscommunications than I've seen in a long time, and that falls on coaching too, for sure. It's not all on the players. The coaches have to make sure these guys know what they're supposed to do. But overall, it was a bad day for the wide receivers. 2133 on the text line also mentions Chig had a bad drop on that drive. Chig's was probably a little bit of a tougher catch. It would have been a bigger play, I think. Up the seam, it was tough to watch Cam Ward in that spot where you need eight. It's a one possession game, but barely. Like, you got to march your team down the field with no timeouts in less than a minute. And he made two great throws to try and set the team up to go make a drive. And both times they got dropped. Yeah. Like, you got to help the young guy out. The good news is, as we heard from Brian Callahan, he said after the game, the moment wasn't too big for Cam Ward. And I think that is something we can pull from yesterday's game, is that Cam Ward, in crunch time, when he had to go make a play in the last minute, he made two really good throws. You look back at the drive before that, or it was one of the drives in the fourth quarter where he had the intentional grounding, and that kind of killed the drive. Like, you know, there were some mistakes late in the game, but crunch time, you needed your young quarterback to go make some plays. He made two great throws, and both times it got dropped. It's tough to see. But again, it's week one. I don't think it's quite time to raise alarm bells on Calvin Ridley. He's a veteran. He's proven that he can be a playmaker in this league, but not a good start to year two for Calvin Ridley. I believe, did he have just two catches in yesterday's game?
Yes.
And one was on a screen pass.
Yeah. I'm sorry. He had four catches for 27 yards.
He had four.
Four for 27.
Think back to where the other ones were. I remember the little screen where he kind of went backwards. And then the one I just talked about where the off-schedule play. But yeah, four catches on eight targets, 27 yards for Calvin Ridley.
Tony Pollard led the team in receiving yesterday with that
just
first
that
play
third down catch.
Yeah, that was all he needed to lead the team in receiving yesterday.
Yeah, and you look through. I didn't realize Elik Iemanner, and we're gonna talk about the young pass catchers too. Elik Iemanner had seven targets yesterday and only caught two of them. Should have been three. Of the elbow, elbow play. But overall, it was a bad day for the Titans pass catchers. And Cam Ward, 12 of 28, does not tell you what Cam Ward did yesterday in his debut. Was he game-changing? No. Like, Will Levis and Marcus Mariota, we talked about their debuts ad nauseum of the four touchdown passes. Cam Ward did not look like that in his debut, but he didn't look like he was completing 42% of his passes, that's for sure. 2133 asked, Cam looked very poised. What are your thoughts on the O-line play? Yeah, we can get into this now, too. I thought the O-line, it was disappointing. The interior looked good. Zeitler had the one false start, which was tough. I mean, it was second and one, third and one, third and one. And you had Zeitler jump, and then the next play, Tony Pollard fumbles. Like, those are two guys, veterans, that cannot be making those mistakes in that spot. You basically took 3 points off the board there. So outside of that, though, I thought the interior looked good. I thought Skoronski looked good. He had a hold at one point, but overall, they were fine. Dan Moore had a tough day, especially in the first half. And then J.C. Latham, you hope he's healthy, because as soon as Ali Udo came in, Vance Joseph said, all right, we're blitzing on every single play. Cam Ward's going to have to figure it out. And it was tough to keep Cam Ward upright at that point. He got hit 12 times, sacked 6 times. Some of those his fault, but overall, I thought the offensive line play was disappointing, considering how much was invested into it over the last couple of off seasons. Let's go back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam from Portland is on the line. Adam, thanks for calling. What's up?
Jake, can you think of anything since he's been here that makes you go, Brian Callahan's the guy? He's doing it.
No.
Okay. Fact that you'd even have to think, like, there should be something. Like, I mean, so here's where I'm at, dude. Like, yeah, I've already talked about it today, and I'm still, like, my blood pressure's not coming down. It's still, like, teetering. But I'm to the point where I'm like, okay, why did they hire him? Because he was Zach Taylor's guy, because they said he developed Joe Burrow. Did he need developing? They said he was with Peyton Manning. Did he need him? Did Matthew Stafford need him? No, he didn't do anything to any of those guys. But Cam needs him, and Levis needed him. So, and this is what you get. You got guys that are out here completely lost under this guy. So, no, I'm putting all the blame. I'll even go as far to say that I don't think Will Levis is as dumb as his head coach. I think he's the dumb one, and he's made Levis dumber, because Levis wasn't doing all that stuff before Callahan got here. And I haven't heard anybody say it, but Cam did the same thing yesterday. It just looked better. It was more buttoned up than Levis doing it, but he still threw it to the side to avoid a sack. So I think Callahan's coaching that crap. So he's just – I don't know the earliest you could fire somebody without it being, you know, negligent on the franchise, but the earliest you could get it done, week 3, 5, 7, whatever, he needs to be fired. I don't care who you even put in there. Anybody's better at this point than him. Let his daddy go with him. They'll figure it out on the offensive line, but you got to get rid of these guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Adam. Yeah, I don't know when the earliest that you could fire Brian Callahan is. I said week 6 or 7 is probably the earliest, because if you fire him after like 2 weeks, it's like, why did you give this guy the whole offseason with this team and with this quarterback and then just fire him? Like, if you were going to fire him 2 weeks in, you should have fired him 6 months ago. But I would say week 6 or 7, if it still looks like that, you gotta cut ties and you gotta move on. I understand you don't want to stunt Cam Ward's progression with, you know, a new system and a new coach, but at some point you might be doing him a disservice just by keeping him around if it still looks like that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts, you can text or call. Austin S. Do you think there was a conversation between Amy and Callahan and the coaching staff? No. Like, it's too soon for that. It's week one. I'm sure there's a conversation between Brinker, Borgonzi, and Callahan of like, hey, that was unacceptable. You've got to figure that out. But I don't know if we're in the territory of Amy Adams Strunk interjecting herself quite yet. Could be wrong, but I don't think we're there quite yet. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Plenty more to come on the Titans. I'm going to be a little nicer in the last hour. We're going to go through some of the things that actually looked good for the Titans yesterday. We're spending 2 hours on the bad, one on the good, which, you know, I think there was more than 2/3 bad yesterday, but, you know, we'll go through some of the things that went well. But to wrap up hour number one, I was in Blacksburg over the weekend for Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech. I have some thoughts on that game. Vanderbilt just absolutely dominating the second half to get to 2-0. We'll talk about that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. You hear the dynamite going on in the background. Vanderbilt, 44-20 over Virginia Tech in Blacksburg on Saturday night. Commodores are 2-0, outscoring the Hokies 34-0 in the second half. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. So I was in the building on Saturday night. As I'm sure anyone who's listened to the show before knows, I graduated from Virginia Tech, now work at Vandy. So it was a crossover event for me. Went and saw some family and friends in Blacksburg this weekend, and then worked in the Vandy radio booth on Saturday night. And at halftime, I thought Virginia Tech played about as good of a game as they could. They controlled the football. They forced a couple of Vandy turnovers. And outside of coming up short of scoring a touchdown on that last drive of the first half, they played about as perfect as they could, and they were up 10. And I said to Andrew Allegretta at halftime, I said, this first drive for Vandy is going to be the difference in this game. If Vandy can go score, make it a three-point game, I think they're right back in this thing, and they may end up winning in the end. And then I said, if Vandy punts and Tech can go right down the field and score, 27-10 may be too much to overcome. I did not expect what happened in the second half. 34-0. Vanderbilt, 5 drives in the second half, 5 touchdowns. 5 drives, 5 touchdowns, and shutting out Virginia Tech. Not only shutting them out, Virginia Tech had 21 yards of offense in the second half. And before their last drive, when Tech had taken Kyron Drones out and brought in their backup quarterback, Pop Watson, they had 5 total yards of offense in the second half. It was 321-5 in terms of second half yardage in Blacksburg on Saturday night. That is pure domination. That was like an NFL team playing a high school team in the second half. And we haven't seen that from Vanderbilt in a long time. The ability to just crush a team and, you know, dominate them to the point that stadium, which was full of 66,000 people jumping to enter Sandman at 7:30, had maybe 2,000 people in it when the clocks hit zero and half of them were Vandy fans. Like, that was soul crushing what Vandy did on Saturday night. And yeah, go ahead, Parker.
I was just going to bounce off your point here. So what you're saying is Vanderbilt or Virginia Tech's offense in the second half was slightly better than what the Bengals did yesterday versus the Browns. Because yes. The Bengals had 7 yards of offense in the second half.
Yes. Virginia Tech with that last drive was able to get their second half yardage up to 21 in 30 minutes of football. It was not even close. And you can look around that Vandy offense, and there aren't a ton of household names, but Cedric Alexander scored two touchdowns. MK Young had a 60-plus yard run in the second half. Trey Richardson looked awesome. Like, that is a dude with track speed, and he went up and made some plays on Saturday night. That touchdown was an acrobatic leaping catch. This Vandy team's got playmakers around Diego Pavia. Eli Stowers caught a touchdown, but it wasn't even from Pavia because the game was so out of hand at that point. Vandy looked really good on Saturday night, and I don't know what that's going to lead to. I don't know if Virginia Tech is really that good at all based on what we've seen in the first 2 weeks, but to go into what is known as a hostile road environment and be trailing by 10 at the half and just assert your will on that team was impressive. And it sets up a great game on Saturday, Parker. Like, night game again in Columbia, Vandy, South Carolina. And both these teams have played Virginia Tech. The transitive rule does not apply to football. Like, just because Vandy won by 24 and South Carolina only won by 13, like, that doesn't mean Vandy is X amount of points, you know, 11 points better than South Carolina. But seeing both those teams play a common opponent, Vandy looked a whole lot more comfortable against Virginia Tech on the road than South Carolina did on a neutral site. Again, doesn't apply to what's going to happen on Saturday, but it's a huge game because Vandy, if you can go into Columbia and win, you know, don't want to put W's on the board before they're official, but you got Georgia State and Utah State at home. I know you lost to Georgia State on the road last year. I would think that's a revenge game for Vandy this season. But you could be 5-0 heading to Tuscaloosa for a rematch of last year's game. That is so impressive from Clark Lea, where there was a whole lot of doubters saying Vanderbilt is going to regress to the mean after last year, some of the impressive wins they had, getting to a bowl game. So far, it doesn't look like they've regressed at all. They look better than last year. And I am fired up for Saturday's game down in Columbia.
Yeah, it's going to be a great weekend for the local teams. You have Tennessee hosting Georgia, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt outgained Virginia Tech by 300 yards in the second half.
321-21.
If that's not TVMA, I don't know what is. And the fact that Vanderbilt is not represented in the latest AP poll, I think, is evidence of drug use among the AP voters. It's astonishing. But
yeah, they only got one vote, right?
Yeah, that's wild. But this Vanderbilt team is probably the best Vanderbilt team since the James Franklin team that went 9-4. I believe it went to the Compass Bowl versus Houston. I'm really excited to see how they play in Columbia on Saturday night.
Yeah, Saturday, you mentioned it. We got big games across the state with Tennessee, Georgia, and Vanderbilt, South Carolina. I agree. I think the AP poll, Vandy at least should have been one of the first couple teams receiving votes. The fact that they were that far down is a little bit confusing to me. I think maybe it's these AP poll voters saying, like, all right, you got a chance to go prove you belong in this poll next week. And if Vandy wins on the road against the top 10 South Carolina team, they will be ranked next week. There's no doubt about that. But it was impressive because when they were down 20-10, I was thinking it was going to be a grinded out second half and Vandy would find a way to win like 31-27. I thought that's how it was going to end up. And even when Vandy went up 23-20, I was like, all right, here we go. This is going to be a back-and-forth game the rest of the way. And Virginia Tech just folded. Vandy folded them in the second half. I don't know if there's been a more impressive win outside of Alabama last year from Clark Lea. Like, obviously, Alabama was more impressive. But, you know, to go on the road against a desperate team, by the way. Like, Brent Pry probably lost his job on Saturday night. That team needed a win bad. And Vandy ran in there, took it over, and they're 2-0. And Saturday's going to be a huge game. I cannot wait to see Pavia versus Sellers. And it may not go well for Vandy. South Carolina is a really talented team. But at this point, for Vandy, I think you're playing with house money heading in there. This is not a game you're expected to go win. You can go in there as the underdog, which we've seen Vandy thrives as the underdog. And if you win, all of a sudden, you're in a different stratosphere of expectations for the rest of the season. If you lose, I said at the beginning of the year, if you're 2-1 coming back home for that Georgia State game, you feel great. So
I feel like Vandy's playing with house money. They might go in there playing fearless. Not that Diego Pavia is ever scared, but I cannot wait to see what Clark Lea and that team are able to do on the road in what might be one of the biggest games Vandy's played in a long time.
Yeah, no, it is so exciting. And I kind of want to flip it to Virginia Tech because I talked about this when they played South Carolina. Their defense looked good for like 2.5 quarters, and then South Carolina just kind of ran away with it. What? I had the game on, but I was primarily focused on Michigan, Oklahoma, and then I had Arizona State, Mississippi State on as well. What went wrong for Virginia Tech's defense in that second half?
I mean, a lot of it was just they couldn't stop the run. And honestly, I looked at it as it wasn't Virginia Tech playing horrible. Not that they played bad. There wasn't great tackling. Not that they played well. The tackling wasn't good. But I just thought Vandy came out with a different energy. And they just made plays. They gashed them over and over. And I will say it was hard for me to keep an eye on the big picture of what was going on in that game because I was spotting. So my main focus on the play was who made the tackle, who made the catch, how far did the play go. So, like, I was in the weeds of all that stuff. So the wide view was a little tough for me to grasp. But I just thought Vandy came out and dominated. Virginia Tech didn't play well, but I don't think they lost that game. Vandy went out and took it.
Yeah, that seems about right. I mean, it's just when you have the momentum after the first half, you're up 20 to 10 right after going into halftime. Virginia Tech was up,
yep.
And then you let Vanderbilt just run away with it. And talk about a coach that's on the hot seat, Brent Pry. I mean, you're 0-2. You get blown out like that in the second half at home. I told this to Connor and Nick when we were doing Weekend Huddle. It's a shame that when we talk about Virginia Tech, we talk more about the Enter Sandman entrance than the actual performance of the team on the field.
No, I mean, Enter Sandman is the highlight of the game for every single Virginia Tech home game. It's gotten to that point. It's sad because, again, as someone who grew up a Virginia Tech fan, I was going to games when Tyrod Taylor was beating Nebraska and they were in the national championship conversation. Logan Thomas was winning ACC championships. Like, it's tough to see the fall. And barring a run to the ACC championship game, I don't think Brent Pry will be the coach at Virginia Tech next year. And, you know, Vandy straight up outcoached, outplayed them on Saturday night. So props to the Commodores. Big win and a huge game coming up on Saturday night in Columbia. Doors and Gamecocks in a game where one of those teams is going to be 3-0 and ranked in the top 15, maybe top 20 for Vandy. I don't know if they put them that high, but Vandy has a chance to prove themselves on Saturday night and then come home for a couple of bye games against Georgia State and Utah State. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you want to text or call, our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, we will get back into the Titans. I know we've bashed on Brian Callahan and the drops and all that, but there were some good things yesterday that we saw. We'll talk about those coming up next. I'm out here at the Brent Peterson Golf Classic at Greystone Golf Club in Dixon. Been a great event so far. Beautiful day for golf. Parker Kelly back at the studio. Third hour coming up here on Next Man Up 102.5 The Game.